15 days and no gas emissions resulted from rich existing in this world.
Folks, welcome back to the First Crack Podcast. I am still Garrick Van Buren. I can still be reached at firstcrack@gmail.com, and I still want to thank you for hitting play. A few weeks back, while enjoying a weekend on the Wisconsin River, I had this notion that, you know, I'm creating these podcasts, I'm creating these web blog posts, you know, you're probably creating a video blog, you know. Oh, thanks to Jeremy Pillar for the theme music. Oh, yeah. And the notion is, you know, we're putting these things back into the world, back into the system. Famoculus, if you will, .com. And we sort of feeding on these things that we're putting back into the system. Now, why can't I do that with my energy, with my infrastructure? And, you know, so what if I put solar panels on my home? You know, could I give back to the grid? Would that make sense? And to help me answer this question, I grabbed a conversation with Rich Holzkamp. He built this home down in Red Wing, completely off-grid, super high efficiency. And that's what he does, is help people through this process. He's at sunswarmth.com. Here we go.
My house construction project represents the I want to be off the grid, but I also want to have a regular house. I want to have a dishwasher. I want to have a freezer, a refrigerator, a dryer. I want to be able to turn the lights on when I want to turn the lights on. So I don't have this presentation of, you know, you really have to have some level of behavior changes in order to accommodate this task, or there's some limitations that you have to deal with or accept. And in my home, it was, okay, I built a regular house in terms of the usage of energy in it, but I'm extremely, extremely energy efficient. And that's the key component right there. Is I have all of these appliances, and I use them when I want to, but they're all energy efficient appliances. They're the top of the line.
And that's what the comment of my wife was when I brought up this idea of maybe we should, you know, install some solar electric panels on the roof and do that. She's like, well, how about we just buy a decent you know, washer dryer and a better refrigerator?
Yeah. That would be the most appropriate, both financially, step to do. You know, a typical house in Minnesota uses right around 25 kilowatt hours of electricity per day.
Okay,
right around a 2,500 square foot house, the average family of 2.5, all the conveniences of electrical appliances, etc. Because of my design and level of energy efficiency, you know, the worst case is I'm in January, where, yes, my heating system is running also. I'm up around 12 kilowatt hours a day.
Hmm.
And I think my last, got my own meter inside my house to record my house usage, and I think the last time was just a little under 7. Last month was a little under 7 kilowatt hours per day.
And that because so you need to pull less in because the house itself, all the appliances, all those things that are outside of the energy system are that much more efficient.
Yeah.
Okay.
Starting with the house construction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big component is I don't have an air conditioning system on my house.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a lot of insulation, and I've got an extremely tight house, and I've got a lot of thermal mass that I can cool off at night so that I can make it through the day.
Oh, gotcha.
And so that summer electric load is eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't have an air conditioning system. That's kind of where the, you know, from a new home construction mm-hmm. standpoint, you can achieve this also.
Okay.
And that, because that was one of our goals was with our project, see how efficient one can make a house.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result of that, we've accomplished that task. You know, and then the next step is, okay, now what is it going to take in order to use renewable energy systems?
Mm-hmm.
So that for this 7 to 12 kilowatt hours per day, can I buy the smallest solar panel system and smallest wind generator system. And I can match those loads.
Right.
From a solar electric standpoint, yep, I get plus or minus 5 to 6 kilowatt hours per day. And from a wind generation, I get 5 to 6 kilowatt hours per day.
And the wind and the solar are working two different systems, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm. The combination is what's needed.
Mm.
Generally, the wind blows when the sun's not shining.
Fair enough.
And in my case, my backup electricity is a gasoline generator.
Mm.
So when I don't get enough solar or wind, then my gasoline generator kicks on automatically.
Okay.
And provides the electricity that I may need in it. So during the summer is the perfect time.
Mm-hmm.
Our loads are very small, our solar capability is very high, and our wind capability is moderate.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we reach our maximum loads, which is basically laundry day, where the washer's running, and that load gets put into the dryer, and that's running, and then the washer gets refilled, and that's running, and then the water pump is running, and then the my hot water heater pump, in my case, is running, and then my well pump needs to run.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this whole series of motors that kick on under that scenario. And then during the winter, on top of that, I've got the potential of up to 4 more pumps, small pumps running, to provide heating to the house. And during the winter, the number of solar hours are the least, but yet the number of wind hours are the most. And so that seasonal match happens as a result of having both systems. Now, in a typical urban house, suburban house, yep, wind generation is generally not the option. Because the rule of thumb is the wind generator has to fall on you and your property if it goes down. Not your neighbor or your neighbor's property.
Right. Which in any sort of dense area, you know, that's going to happen. That's how that makes sense.
Generally, that isn't going to happen. We've got a lot of radio towers up, and we got a lot of there's our increasing number of wind generation towers that are going up, and generally they don't come down.
Right. In an urban environment, in a suburban environment, with an existing home, to install solar, or doesn't it make sense? Does it only make sense for businesses and organizations that have such a... I don't know. I mean, when would it make sense for this option?
We're going to kind of break the question apart.
Okay.
In terms of, from an economic sense, from a me opening up my wallet, giving somebody money to do this, it generally doesn't make sense.
The payback versus the investment is so long term that
it's plus or minus a 20-year payback.
Okay,
and that's kind of beyond people's reach of economically. Well, that certainly makes sense to not do it then.
which is why not every house has a solar panel on it.
Right. Yeah, we can't compete with solar with electric utility, because the electric utility is selling you electricity at 7.5 cents, 8 cents. Now, when you add another penny to 2 cents for taxes and fees and all that kind of stuff, you end up in that 9-10 cents per kilowatt hour.
Mm-hmm.
Solar is still 20 to 25 cents per kilowatt hour.
Okay.
Okay, so we can't compete with them. Because they've got this huge system, it's all financed with low interest rates, they've got a lot of people working on it, and they can amortize their costs over 50 plus years.
Right.
That's how long their system should be lasting. 50 plus 75 years is what they should be lasting. A solar electric system generally would be 25 to 30 years.
Mm.
On an average life of them.
Okay.
And so, from the economic side, it's like, no, but, you know, if you do a relative comparison to the port utility vehicle, you know, it's in that same price range of $20,000 to $30,000. Is it worthwhile? Do you get a payback? No. we can't compare it to a house because houses are so much more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you get an economic return if you stay into the house long enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything else that a consumer buys, there's really not a comparison reference point.
Gotcha.
So that's why they're kind of left out hanging there of, oh, geez, you know, Rich, you're asking me to finance a system that pay itself back in 20 plus or minus years, and it's not going to supply all my power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, why do you want me to do this? Basically becomes the next question. And that's where we basically have to ask folks to philosophically make a decision as to what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you want this world of energy to go? Do you want another coal-fired power plant? Do you want another gas peaking plant in somebody's backyard? Do you want all this mining going on in order to find that coal and natural gas and oil of which we know that there's an end to it? Coal being a very long end.
Mm-hmm.
Oil not being very far away. Natural gas not being that very far away. So all of those price increases are having some immediate societal impacts. And all of our infrastructure, roads, electrical distribution, natural gas distribution, oil / gasoline distributions, are all being maxed out.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got this opportunity society-wise of saying, okay, which path do we want to go? Do we want to continue to serve large corporations and the standard electric utility route, or do we want to move society in this direction? Philosophically, yep, we got to ask people to say, you know, answer these kind of questions. And again, you buy a car for $20,000 to $30,000. What's wrong with spending $20,000 to $30,000 on your electrical? And so then your other question, does it make sense to install a system of which you're selling electricity to the utility? Literally, it's kind of not. I mean, if you've got money and you can make an investment in this equipment and you'll are open to a small return on your investment, then fine, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But at least, at a minimum, think about taking care of yourself. And take a look at what your electrical consumption is and see how you can match that with renewable energy systems.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you want to match that directly on your own site, on your own home, on your own business, that's one question. And then the other is, well, you'd really like to start moving the world in the direction of renewable energies. Let me send a few extra dollars to the electric utility under the Green Power Program so that they put up the wind generation, mm-hmm, and the solar electric systems and the methane digesters out on dairy farms, mm-hmm, and hog farms. Is it really overall society-wise for everybody involved in this world? You know, that should be the overall direction, business-wise, et cetera, to have happen. 90% of the people in the world don't want to deal with it. They want to plug their appliance in and they want to use their electricity and watch TV or keep their beer cold or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But there is this group, you know, plus or minus 10% that says, no, I want to personally be responsible for what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do the energy conservation steps. I'll do the energy efficiency steps so that I can not have to fork out a huge amount of money, because you can. You can fork out a huge amount of money for solar electric.
Mm-hmm.
You can fork out a huge amount of money for wind generation. You know? But how do you avoid that huge amount of money? How do you say, okay, I want to increase my energy efficiency so my loads are really small so that I can only, so I only have to buy a small solar electric system, 1 to 2 kW worth of power,
mm-hmm,
capability. Yeah. And that's generally what we're seeing in the industry is either from a remodeling standpoint or from a new home construction standpoint, you make all of these energy efficiency decisions and then you buy a renewable energy system that's 1 kW, 2 kW, 3 kW.
Ah.
On the solar electric side, it's basically $10,000 a kW.
And we're talking, you were saying it's, you know, the average Minnesota home is 25 kW per day?
25 kilowatt hours. There's two different concepts here. One is your energy usage, which is in kilowatt hours.
Okay.
Okay, how do you get to kilowatt hours? You multiply kilowatts by hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the kilowatts is the kind of the one concept to think about. It is your peak power needs, your maximum power needs of a typical house is plus or minus 7 kWh.
Okay.
And that kind of equates to the 25 kilowatt hours per day.
Okay.
At some point in time during the day, you turn on the air conditioner and the microwave's running at the same time and the refrigerator's kicked on, you need this maximum power input.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about 7 kW.
And then on the flip side, everyone's asleep, it's nighttime, nothing's on, so that's that's where it averages out.
Yeah, 1.5, 2 kW. On my design, I found out that basically, my peak power is about a 1 kW,
mm-hmm,
1,000 watts, kind of the low speed on the hair dryer. At the most, I'm doing 1.5 kW high speed on the hair dryer. So that's kind of my, if I've got things running all at the same time, I'm using about the same amount of peak kW of a high speed on the hair dryer.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Across the whole home. And based on the little bit of poking around I've done, one of the solar electric panels was half a kW, something like that. So
actually about a tenth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, one panel, and they're grouped together, and I don't know if you remember what mine looks like, but it's kind of like 2 4x8 sheets of plywood on that tracker device.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And that is 8 panels of right around 100 watts or 1/10 kW.
Ah.
It altogether it comes out to 1.3 kW.
Mm-hmm.
And my wind generator is 1 kW.
Mm-hmm.
When the wind is blowing at 30 miles an hour. That doesn't always happen. So my wind generator, on average, runs at a half a kW. Yeah. My solar electric, because of it being on a tracker, when it's facing the sun, yep, I'm pretty close to the 1.3 kW. And that tracks the sun and follows it all day long. So I've got that peak power capability during a sunny day, and that will take care of all my laundry peak loads,
mm-hmm,
conditions. So we do, behavior-wise, we do match that out. Yeah, we don't do our laundry when we're sleeping. We do it in the sunniest part of the day.
That makes sense.
And I should touch on something here, that my wind generator is up at 100 feet. And a 30-mile-an-hour wind up there is the same as a plus or minus 20-mile-an-hour wind down on the ground.
Oh, so it's that much more that...
So it's well worth it buying power, going up as high as you can.
Again, not making it very practical for a non-rural installation.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Whereas tracker, yeah, that's only 10, 15 feet up in the air in my backyard. And on the large wind generation side, it's a 2-year wait now.
Oh, wow.
There's so much demand for them that manufacturing now has to make this major investment in manufacturing facilities to keep up with the demand. Solar electric is the same way. On a small scale, now we're talking a 2 to 3 month wait for solar electric systems on a residential level, wind generation on a residential level. But at the large utility level size, no, it's a 1 to 2 year wait. They're so huge, so massive, so much major manufacturing has to go on that, you know, all of that has to happen. We're at that stage where demand is much higher than supply. We need to build a manufacturing facility so that we can meet the demand. Almost all of the major oil companies have renewable energy divisions. Some are still holding out, but all the rest of them are realizing that, one, they can make money, and two, it's the right environmental thing to do. And three, at a very large scale, economically, I mean, the large wind generation, they generally have about a 5 to 6 year payback.
Okay. So okay. Is that even at the larger, industrial and organizational levels, solar still has that 20-30 year payback?
At a large commercial utility size installations, which are just starting to happen, they should be down around 15 years.
Okay.
But again, from a manufacturing standpoint, because of that trend, the demand is exceeding the supply. Solar electric panels are also use the same raw material as computer chips.
Right.
Silicon. So all of a sudden, there's this shortage of silicon. Not that there's a real raw material shortage of silicon, it's just that distribution of digging it up, processing it, getting into a chip format or a solar cell format. That process is behind. And so, again, major investments are going on so that we can speed up that solar electric cell manufacturing.
If we say that for 90% of the people, that the smartest way for, or the easiest way to get into renewable is to pay their electric utility a few extra dollars a month to encourage the utility to invest in renewable, can you make some thoughts, some comments and recommendations on things that we can do inside the home?
Yeah, the very first thing to do is to replace all the lights with compact fluorescent. That's the quickest, easiest, lowest cost thing to do. That'll cost you, I mean, we can buy a pack of 3 bulbs, compact fluorescent bulbs, for like $8, $9 now. And so that is the very first step. And so you go from a 60-watt, 75-watt incandescent light bulb down to a 13-watt, 15-watt, 17-watt compact fluorescent.
Okay, and that's a huge distinction there.
Huge, yeah. And for a homeowner, if you're looking at making this decision from an economic standpoint, yeah, it's about 6 months. So economic-wise, yep, it's the right thing to do. Environmentally, yep, it's the right thing to do. The only question in regards to compact fluorescence is, one, is fluorescent lights, and not everybody likes lighting from fluorescence. Especially, you know, if you need a high-quality white light, you do have the choice. You can get those also from fluorescent light bulbs, so you get that efficiency. But you do pay, you know, rather than the $8 for a pack of 3, you're paying probably $12 for one. You know, if you got your favorite reading chair and you want to see that contrast of the black and white and the print, yep, get yourself an expensive compact fluorescent light for that application. The next thing is the refrigerator. Take a look at replacing it, and there's a website called, which is ACEEE.org, and they list all of the high-efficiency appliances. So if you're at that point of wanting to or needing to buy a new refrigerator, first step is go to this website. And first thing that you'll recognize is that all manufacturers have a very high efficient refrigerator and that there's a rating system for them.
This is the is this different than the Energy Star? The same thing as the Energy Star?
I'm going to phrase it as it's kind of the same thing. Okay. Energy Star is the top 20%. If there's a top 20%, there's the low end of the 20%, and there's a high end. My personal and professional and my business goal is to get people to look at the top of the top of the top.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that top 1 to, let's say, 3%. So you basically get down to about 1.5 kilowatts per day for the refrigeration.
And those are the things that are listed on the ACEEE.org site.
Yep. And they also, other appliances, freezers, air conditioners, dishwashers, but the refrigerators. That's a 24/7, 365 day, running every once in a while situation.
Okay.
A not too old refrigerator, meaning like 5 years plus, is probably using around 4 to 5 kilowatt hours a day. A really old one, when we hang on to our Avocado or Harvest Gold one,
right,
they're running at about 8, 9, 10 kilowatt hours a day.
Wow.
So you can go down to 1.5 to 2 kilowatt hours. And that's why there's a whole bunch of folks up there in that 25 kilowatt hours per day.
Just because they have this appliance that's running constantly that sucks so much energy.
Yeah. And running at about 8 to 10 kilowatt hours per day. So, again, instantaneously they could drop down to a third of what they used to use by changing out the refrigerator. After that, it's basically the freezer and the dishwasher.
The rest of the major appliances.
The washing machines. They're all kind of equivalent energy use, run hour-wise in it. And so you start going through your house and you start at the top with the lights, do the refrigerator. And if the house uses a lot of air conditioning, think about that. But, you know, the air conditioner is only two months out of the year.
Right.
And out of those 2 months, it's like half of those days. So it's like fork out $3,000-$4,000 for a new air conditioner because it's something that runs 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when the air conditioner fails, that's the time to take the time rather than instantaneously respond emotionally to, I got to get another air conditioner right away. Mm-hmm. Let's think about this. Go to the ACEEE list. Look for the highest efficiency. And then find a local dealer that can offer and install that within a week.
Gotcha.
Type of a time frame.
And the same sort of thing for something like a water heater or other sorts of infrequent use appliances.
So getting people to think ahead of time of saying, okay, I'm going to have to replace the refrigerator eventually here, and as soon as possible is better. You know, go out and market. Don't go out and shop for one. One that satisfies your other needs in terms of tone, color, texture, you know, stainless steel, white, black, you know, how many drawers do you want it, all that kind of stuff. But be ready to make that decision from an energy efficiency standpoint. And then you're really ready to start heading in the direction of, yes, I do want a solar electric system on my house.
Because you've done everything else, and that's really the... That's the last step, the last thing that you can do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can use your own power during the day when the sun is shining. You know, if you were staying at that, you need peak power at 5 to 7 kW, you're talking $50,000, $70,000. But if you get yourself down to only needing 2 to 3 kW, now you're down into less than the cost of an SUV. Not twice the price of an SUV.
Right. And you have
a new car.
And you have an infrastructure that has a lower load either way. So you're actually pulling less from the grid to begin with. So if you don't go that extra step, that's okay too.
Yeah. The ultimate concept in an urban, suburban area is to be a net zero energy home so that during the spring, summer, and fall, you are generally slightly producing more electricity than what you actually use in your home.
Right.
And then you're putting that into the grid.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you hit those gloomy, cloudy, snowy winter days, you're kind of getting that electricity back over the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
And that 2 to 3 kW solar electric system with an energy efficient appliance house puts a little bit of electricity into the house all day long from basically 8 o'clock until 6 o'clock. And you get that back from the utility in the winter. When my loads are greater than what my wind and the solar electric generator can provide, I have to rely on a gasoline engine or a generator to supply my electricity.
Mm-hmm. There's no notion of storage or battery in that sort of system.
Well, I do have a battery bank.
Oh, okay.
I've got 4 kW worth of peak battery power that's available to me. And then if I deplete that, then my gas generator kicks in.
I see.
And then my gas generator matches the loads that I'm using at that time. And then it runs for another basically 45 minutes to recharge the batteries to bring that back up to 4 kW worth of peak power.
Okay. But that's got to be, I would imagine, a pretty gloomy day or a pretty gloomy week for that to happen regularly.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, if I'm having a party and my microwave's running a lot, nope. I'll bet they're off. The generator will be running.
Gotcha.
It's a very short period load, but it's a very large electrical consumption.
Mm-hmm.
But my worst case scenario is my gas generator runs 6 hours a day.
There's no sort of being stuck without wind or solar and being out of gas?
Yeah, that's a cold, gloomy, non-windy day. And I need to heat the house.
Okay.
To keep the refrigerator running. 6 hours a day. It's gets up and runs every 4 hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
And runs for an hour. And then shuts off, and then either it's the sun comes out or the wind picks up or not. Then 4 hours later, it'll kick on again. And so that philosophically, from my perspective, means that I'm down to, worst case scenario, 6 hours of gas emissions into the atmosphere rather than relying on a coal-fired power plant running 24/7 and always. So that was one of my personal goals, was emissions. How do I reduce the amount of combustion going on in the world? And my best case scenario is 15 days without it. 15 days and no gas emissions resulted from rich existing in this world.
That's going to be a nice feeling.
It helps. And that's the intent of the whole project, is to show people, you know, what are the pluses and minuses of these technologies and how well can it be done. And as, you know, and my technologies are now basically 4 years old. And, you know, eventually I'll be replacing my solar panels on my solar tracker. And rather than being at 1.3 kW, I'm hoping to be up to 1.7 or eventually 2 kW. Solar electric panels are sitting at plus or minus 15% efficient. And this is one of the disadvantages. On the renewable energy side, it's less efficient. The gasoline engine is only, you know, 21, 22% efficient. My wind generator is right around 25, 26% efficient. A little bit better there. So that's one of the things that kind of, well, you know, in a coal-fired power plant, because of all of the technologies involved in that, sits at plus or minus 32, 33.
Okay.
Maybe 35% efficient. But again, it's coal. Yes, I'm less efficient at 15%, but it's fun.
Right. You didn't have to have somebody mine it for you and transport it and all that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Rich, again, thank you. And you're over at sunswarmth.com?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. And, well, yeah, I like your, oh, shoot, I don't have it right in front of me, but your mission or your phrase of the things that you didn't think you needed to know.
Exactly. Yeah, it's worked out well.
Yeah. This is one of those things that, you know, boy, we'd really appreciate if people would get to know this.
Yes.
And, you know, once you're educated on it, it makes it a lot easier to move forward and progress.
Perfect.
So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Have a great weekend. I'm sure we'll be in touch.